Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It is about that time. Happy Friday. Or as I like to say, Fri-yay. August 24th, 2018. You have made it. The end of the week is here, and the weekend is near. Oh, boy. I'm excited because tonight, marks night two of the opening week of high school football. Some pretty entertaining games last night. We'll recap a few scores from last night's action. But you know what? Our guest that will lead today's show is going to help usher in what will quite probably be the biggest high school football opener in this area's history. I think you can legitimately make that argument. Week one, I can't think of, and again, I've only been in this area, you know, for about 10 years, dating back to my time as a freshman here at Michigan State in 2008. But, you know, looking at the history of my coverage here when it comes to high school football, I can't think of a week one high school football matchup that has this much fanfare. Ithaca and PW, Pomona, Westphalia at Alma College. We will welcome to the show in a little less than now 15 minutes, Jeremy Miller, who is the head coach of the PW Pirates, back-to-back Division VII state championship holders. I love Jeremy. I can't wait to chat with him around 1:15. If you remember earlier this week, we talked with his opposition, head coach of the Ithaca Yellow Jackets, who ride one of the longest streaks in not just the state of Michigan, probably the longest streak in the state of Michigan, but one of the longest regular season win streaks in the nation when it comes to high school football. The Ithaca Yellow Jackets putting that 72 straight regular season win streak on the line against Jeremy Miller's squad. We talked with Terry Hesburgh earlier this week about the matchup and got a perspective from the Yellow Jacket side of things, and now we will talk about the Pirates today. So you don't want to miss that. Jeremy will join me again around 1:15 p.m. You don't want to miss that interview. Also, Mitch Lutzky is going to join me after we talk with Jeremy, as he has a very cool book that profiles a baseball team that really broke down and was one of the first squads to really break the color barrier in the world of sports, particularly, of course, the sport of baseball. Mitch Lutzky will talk about his new book, The Page Fence Giants. You don't want to miss that. And we have a triple header of guests for you today. After we talk with Mitch, we will welcome to the show, as we do each and every Friday, James Moore, former Michigan State fullback, great, and 1988 Rose Bowl champion. We'll have the swap meet of James Moore, as Moore is also an assistant coach for the DeWitt Panthers, as DeWitt got a pretty nice win to open up the season over Grand Rapids Christian. I actually saw James Moore on the tube last night, caught him on the sidelines next to head coach Rob Zimmerman, as DeWitt, the Panthers, move on to a now 1-0 start to the season. So you don't want to miss that. James will help us recap what happened and what went right for DeWitt last night. And we'll have Reflection Friday to cap things off. I'll briefly have some thoughts on the selections for Michigan State football captains. And, of course, we'll reflect on the week that has been here on Current Sports and Beyond. If you would like to be a part of the show, multiple ways in which you can do so, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to Facebook.com/WKAR News and check out the live stream there. And you can tweet us. Tweet the show at WKAR_sports or tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Last night marked the official start of local high school football action. Heck, for the state, entire state of Michigan, right? The opening night of high school football across this great state. When it comes to our local action, a quick recap of last night's scores. Okemos over Mason, 21-17. East Lansing delivering a beatdown of St. John's, 40-6. Williamson over Battle Creek Penfield, 51-16. DeWitt over Grand Rapids Christian, 22-10. Sparta over Lansing Everett, 28-6. Hudsonville defeating Grand Ledge, 27-7. Caledonia over Holt, 39-8. Belding over Langsburg, 41-6. Mount Morris over Bath, 42-18. Leslie over Dansville, 32-27. And Portland over Ovid Elsie, 18-0. Nice shutout for the Red Raiders there. And tonight's schedule, again, for those that did not open up the season last night, we'll do so today. And a quick update when it comes to the games that you can enjoy if you want to get out and about and enjoy week one of high school football action. Ionia will be at Alma at 7 p.m. Again, all of these games, most, I should say, of these games happening at 7 p.m. Owosso at Corunna, 7 p.m. Jackson Northwest at Eaton Rapids. Sterling Heights Parkway Christian at Fowler. Charlotte at Fowlerville. Coldwater at Hazlitt. Chicago Little Village Lawndale from Illinois will be at Lakewood. That will be actually a 4 p.m. kickoff time. Waverly at Lansing Catholic. You also have Jackson Parma Western at Eastern. Gaylord at Sexton. Fulton at Merrill. Ithaca at Pawama Westphalia. That will be a 7:30 p.m. Kickoff time again at Alma College. We'll have Jeremy Miller, head coach of the Pawama Westphalia Pirates, on the show in just a moment. Maple Valley at Potterville. Grass Lake at Stockbridge. Carson City Crystal at St. Charles. Ashley at August Smith. North Adams Jerome at Portland St. Pat. And Weberville at Waldron. That is what your local slate of high school football opening week, day two, looks like. All right, Michigan State women's soccer. They kept things rolling with a dominating 4-0 victory over visiting Green Bay yesterday. Freshman Cameron Evans scored the Spartans' first two goals and was followed up from goals by Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week, Sadie Misiewicz, and Katie Madrigal. The women's team's next game will take place during the Husky and Nike Invitational, which will take place on August 30th when the Spartans take on Portland. That's 6 days from now. Also, the Michigan State men's soccer team will return home to face off against the University of South Florida tonight at 7 p.m. The Spartans will look for a win tonight following back-to-back ties against Western Michigan and Xavier. And the number 22 Michigan State women's volleyball team will open the 2018 campaign at the Tennessee Classic. The Spartans take on host Tennessee tonight at 8 p.m., then battle Chattanooga at 11 a.m. and Belmont at 5:30 p.m. tomorrow. The 2017 Spartans finished the season, of course, with a 24-9 record and were 14-6 for a fourth place finish in the Big Ten Conference. They went all the way to the Elite Eight of the NCAA tourney. The Spartans graduated seven athletes from the 2017 team, including its entire starting rotation. The only returning starter from last year's NCAA team is sophomore libero. That's Jamie Cox. And also we had head coach of the squad, Kathy George, on Tuesday's Current Sports. If you missed that interview or any interview in current sports history, just simply visit facebook.com/WKAR News or WKAR.org. Six freshmen for Kathy George's team. We wish them luck this weekend. And the Michigan State field hockey team welcomes Old Dominion University today, actually right now. That one getting underway around 1 p.m. today for the regular season opener. Today's game is the first of two for the Spartans this weekend as they match up with Kent State on Sunday. This is the seventh overall meeting between the two sides, with MSU trailing the all-time series 4-2. Last season, the Spartans were defeated by the Monarchs by a score of 3-2. MSU follows up today's matchup with a game against Kent State University on Sunday, August 26th at 1 p.m. So this Sunday at 1 p.m. The Detroit Lions are back on the road again for their third preseason game as they take on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Lions are 0-2 in the NFL preseason thus far and haven't looked the greatest in their first two showings, as we have well documented here on Current Sports. Kickoff for tonight will take place at 8 p.m. and will be aired on CBS. Also, I see that if you have the Yahoo Sports app, they will also be streaming that game as well. So if you're not near a TV, just download the Yahoo Sports app. All right, there were moments yesterday when the Detroit Tigers resembled their customary 2018 selves. But other than Matthew Boyd pitching six strong innings, this was something of a game day makeover at Comerica Park. The Tigers slammed James Shields for 3 6th inning homers, all after Boyd had pitched shutout baseball on their way to a rare breezy victory, 7-2 over the Chicago White Sox. Now, Nick Castellanos, Mikey Matuk, and Ronnie Rodriguez homer for the Tigers in the sixth. And with the win, they are now 53-75 on the year. The NBA's Board of Governors are expected to pass rule changes for the 2018-19 season that include resetting the shot clock after an offensive rebound to not 24, but 14 seconds, simplifying the clear path foul rule as well, and expanding the definition of the hostile act to more easily trigger instant replay. Now, the NBA sent a memo to the league's general managers and coaches yesterday to outline the unanimous recommendations of the league's competition committee to the Board of Governors. The Board of Governors will vote on the three rule changes in a September 20th to 21st meeting and need a two-thirds majority vote to pass the legislation. Interesting rule changes there, going from 24 to 14 after an offensive rebound happens. So that's pretty interesting. We'll see how that affects the game, maybe speed it up a little bit, right? All right, that wraps up your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News to check out the live stream there and comment below that video. And also join the conversation on Twitter. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show, or at least follow the show at WKAR_sports. All right, all right, all right. Happy Friday to all of our current sports listeners out there. I really hope that you had a fantastic week, and we plan on ushering you into the weekend with a dynamite hour of current sports coming to you live here on WKAR AM 870, 105.1 FM. A lot happening, folks. A lot happening in the world of local sports and beyond. I know many of you have been waiting. You know, as we have passed the weeks now, when it comes to summer sports, not a lot going on. Hard to root for the Detroit Tigers, right? Even though I'm rocking a Detroit Tigers cap for those watching on our Facebook page live stream right now. It's been really tough to watch the old English D. We all knew that this was going to be a rebuild year, and we'll probably go through this kind of rebuild for the next, at least in my opinion, the next 2 years as well. But with that being said, I know you guys have been waiting for football to come back. Yesterday marked the start of high school football here in the state of Michigan. Exciting stuff. Today, day two of high school football action. And in just a moment here, I'm going to throw to our first guest of the hour. We got a triple header of guests for you today, and we'll be starting off with a bang with Jeremy Miller, head coach of the Pauma Westphalia Pirates. But I also want to say that, hey, we are a week away from the start of Michigan State College football. Can you believe that? Just 7 days. 7 days, Spartan fans. And a week from now, Michigan State will be playing host to Utah State Friday night under the lights. And a quick reminder that from 5 to 6 p.m., so 2 hours before the start of that matchup between the Spartans and Utah State, be sure to tune in to Current Sports at 5, from 5 to 6. We will have a live tailgate show. Come out and say hi for those who will be on campus. We'll be broadcasting right outside of the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences building, right outside the WKAR doors, right next to the parking structure. We'll have a big tent. We'll be hard to miss. A lot of tailgaters tailgate in that area anyway. Come up and say hello. We will have a ton of giveaways, a lot of great guests, and a lot of great conversation as we get you ready for the start of Michigan State football. So again, that will be August 31st. 2 hours before the start of the season for Michigan State football, as they will welcome Utah State to Spartan Stadium, will be on the air from 5 to 6 p.m., a Current Sports live tailgate special. Look forward to seeing you there. All right, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports, our first guest for today's Current Sports. Boy, oh boy. As I stated at the top of the hour, and as I've been stating throughout this entire week, I can't remember a week one Mid-Michigan football game that puts two powerhouses of this kind of nature on the gridiron. I can't remember a season-opening game that has this much lore and fanfare connected to it. Folks, I am talking about the Pauma Westphalia Pirates, back-to-back Division VII state champions, going against the Ithaca Yellow Jackets. Ithaca has been a powerhouse program in this area for quite some time. They are riding a 72-game win streak in the regular season and will be putting that on the line against the defending Division VII state champion, Pauma Westphalia Pirates. Earlier this week, we talked with the head coach of the Ithaca Yellow Jackets, Terry Hesbrook, and today we now welcome to the show the head coach of the PW Pirates, our dear friend, Jeremy Miller. Jeremy, do you have butterflies when you listen to that intro and know that just 6 hours from now, you'll be getting it on at Alma College against Ithaca? How you feeling today, my man?
Hey, I'm great. I don't know about butterflies. You just kind of get that little bit of adrenaline rush when you hear, you know, people talk about the accolades of the two programs, and you realize that this day that, you know, you kind of had circled on the calendar since January when the game was, the game was decided. It's finally here, and I think, I'm sure Coach Hesbrook and his guys feel the same way. At this point, we're just ready to get out there and play the game.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, all the talk, all of the hype leading up to August 24th. I know you're just ready and your team is ready to just get out there and play some football now. But, you know, kind of reflecting on the days and the weeks leading up to this moment, what has the preparation been like for this matchup, Jeremy?
Well, we're familiar with Ithaca in the sense that we've scrimmaged them for, I think it's been the past, say, 15 years. So we've been on the field with them before. Now, obviously, it wasn't a game-type setting, and quite frankly, our scrimmages haven't always went that great against them either. But we're familiar with, I guess, to some extent, the offense and the defense and the things that they want to do. So the majority of this summer has been spent, you know, prepping for what we think they're going to try to do to us tonight.
And when it comes to, I want to, you know, break down X's and O's wise what you expect from Ithaca and how you plan to counter that in just a moment. But, you know, it was really cool talking with Terry Hesburgh earlier this week and kind of getting the backstory of how this game came about. Now, to my understanding, according to Terry, I mean, you guys were just looking at, you know, your non-conference schedule, weren't too happy, especially travel-wise with the options you had. And I think it was you, Jeremy, that brought up the possibility of you guys playing one another. Is that correct?
Well, I can't remember how it actually, which one of us brought it up at first, I guess. But, yeah, we were kind of going over what we're going to do over the summertime, throwing with them 7-on-7s and nailing that down. And we were both kind of just expressing the frustration we were having of finding an opponent, a week one opponent. And it's never lined up before where we've both had an open week to play each other. I think traditionally, I don't know if it was Clare or Shepherd or one of those schools, they've always had a kind of a traditional opener in a week nine, and those are the 2 weeks that are open for us. So, you know, last year we had Monroe St. Mary's Catholic Central, and that was, you know, it was a haul. I mean, we're talking 2.5 hours away for a game, and looked for something a little closer. And I can't remember which one of us brought it up first, but it was just kind of like, well, I guess we might as well play each other and see where we're at right away. So in the end, it's kind of funny how it happened. And, we're definitely looking forward to the challenge.
Now, Ithaca, of course, will be putting that 72-game regular season win streak on the line. That's a streak that has been talked about a lot, especially in recent years here in the area. Jeremy, I'm curious, how much have your players talked about that streak and possibly breaking and snapping those 72 straight wins?
You know, honestly, Al, we haven't talked about it at all. The streaks that schools kind of put on, I mean, over half of Ithaca's team that's been involved in that streak won't be on the field tonight. And for us, we just want to win the football game. Snapping their streak, I guess, is one thing that happens from the game. But for us, it's just about going out there and competing against a school that's that good and that prestigious and putting on a good display. So to be honest with you, I don't think we've addressed it at all with our players. I've heard some of the kids kind of talk about it a little bit, but we don't really care about the streak. We want to win the game because winning the game will take care of that streak thing anyways.
Right. That's what it's all about. Just keeping your troops focused and you know, not, you know, allowing anything, any kind of dialogue to really surpass what you guys got to do out there tonight, staying focused. I like that, Jeremy. And you know, when a game of this magnitude, though, with two big programs in Pomona, Westphalia and Ithaca, I'm curious, what's the buzz been like for this game out there in PW?
Oh, there's a lot of buzz. We're selling T-shirts, special T-shirts for the game. I've just been hearing from a lot of people that, of course, everybody's heading out there. And then I've got people telling me that, you know, they'll work with so-and-so. And that person has no affiliation to either school, but they want to watch a high school football game tonight. So they're heading out to Alma College to check it out. So a lot of buzz around town. I'm sure it's the same way in Ithaca as well. And we think playing at Alma College is going to be kind of fun. Nice venue for it. Just hoping the weather cooperates and we don't get any thunder or lightning delays tonight. And if that happens, I think it'll be a good night.
Without a doubt, I'm looking forward to it, Jeremy. Now, I want to talk about last year and the year prior to that just for a second here, because, again, you guys are back-to-back D7 state champions. How have you been able to build what you've built out there in PW, Jeremy? And it has to be, have you taken time to kind of just reflect on what has happened these past two seasons and since the time you've taken over this program?
Yeah, the number one factor that we have going for us is that our parents are extremely supportive, and they hold their kids to really high standards. The product that we as a coaching staff get to work with is unbelievable in terms of, you know, there's people don't make excuses for their kids. People allow their kids to struggle and go through adversity. They don't come typically, you know, trying to, you know, save the day with some kind of issue. They let their kids handle it. So just that whole atmosphere of, you know, you kind of put the work in. They encourage and they'll drive their kids up to our after-school strength and conditioning and weightlifting programs. They'll drive them up on Saturday mornings. They're very supportive, but they're supportive in a positive way. And I think that that is, quite frankly, the edge that we have right now, just in the sense that we get this great product to work with. Our kids come ready to work, and parents aren't afraid to let them work. So I can't say enough about the parental support that we get.
That's amazing, because I tell you what, I talk to a lot of high school coaches and youth coaches in general, Jeremy, they don't have that kind of parental support. So I'm sure that is definitely a luxury and a plus for you, my man. And again, last season, you guys go 13-1, 7-0, first in the CMAC, go all the way down to Ford Field, and again, win another state championship. Jeremy, what's the toughest part about repeating?
Well, I would say last year the toughest part for us was coming out, and you know, we were flat week one against Monroe St. Mary's. I mean, we played our worst game of the year, hands down. And I think it was a situation, it was gut check time early for us, because you have the target on your back. I mean, you're the defending champs. Everybody that steps on the field with you wants to beat you extra for that reason. So last year, the toughest part was coming out of the gate and being all excited to you know, defend this championship, to go get another one. And I mean, we fell flat on our face. And, you know, to the credit of the players, they picked themselves up. They looked and saw what mistakes they made, and they fixed it. And from then on, we were just kind of off. We were just kind of off and running. So just the expectations and things like that, I think, and getting everybody's number one shot, their best effort week in and week out is tough.
So your team knows that now, Jeremy. Do they embrace that target on their back now?
Yeah, I think so. I think they do. We talk to them about it a lot, that everybody that plays you is going to give you their best shot, but that's what you want. And it's a place, of course, everybody wants to be. I think any true, you know, competitor and, you know, athletes, they want the target on their back, and we'd like to keep it there.
Again, folks, we are chatting with Jeremy Miller, the head coach of the defending back-to-back D7 state championship Pawama-Westphalia football team. Pawama-Westphalia will play Ithaca tonight at 7:30 p.m. at Alma College. Going to be such a great atmosphere tonight. Real briefly, Jeremy, before we get you out of here, when it comes to the X's and O's and kind of a brief team preview of your squad this season, you know, when you look at your team, you guys have always had a great rushing attack. You know, that power rushing attack. And, you know, you have both Cameron Worth and Hunter Worth getting a lot of those carries in the backfield. Can we expect a lot of those two players tonight against Ithaca?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to come up there. I'm sure it's no secret to Ithaca. I mean, we're going to look to run the football. That's how we win games. We have to be able to run. We have to be able to complete our passes when we choose to throw. But yeah, we're experienced up front on the offensive line, so our run game is something that we're going to be relying heavily on. And hopefully, we're able to make some make some holes and get those guys going on the ground.
When it comes to the game plan that Ithaca has, what are you making sure that your team knows about Ithaca game plan wise coming into tonight?
Well, the thing on the defensive side of the ball is they've got to know their assignment and they've got to get to where they go. They've got to fly around, make football plays, and just recognize what the defense is coming in, what the call is from the sideline. Offensively, we just have to execute and do what we do, stay on our blocks, drive to the whistle, and more than anything, we cannot turn the ball over. If we get into a deal where we're turning the ball over and we lose the turnover battle tonight, I don't see us coming out on top. We have to take care of the football against a good team like that.
All right. You expecting this one to be pretty tight tonight, Jeremy?
Oh, I Yeah, I do. I think it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be great for both schools, because whether you come out on top or whether, you know, you don't win, you're going to have a lot of stuff, weaknesses exposed that you can work on going forward. And that's why Terry and I think in the end, both of us thought this was a good look for us.
All right. Well, many, including myself, are certainly looking forward to checking out this one tonight. Jeremy, good luck to you, my man, and have fun. Don't forget to have fun tonight, all right?
All right, we'll do. We'll do. Always nice talking to you.
All right, Jeremy Miller, head coach of the Powamo Westphalia Pirates high school football team, PW in Ithaca. Does it get better than that? My goodness. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will be talking a little sports history with Mitch Lutsky, author of The Page Fence Giants, a history of black baseball's pioneering champions. That and so much more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Much thanks to Jeremy Miller for joining us at the top of the hour. Jeremy Miller, head coach of the Powamo Westphalia Pirates, getting ready for the big game that will take place exactly an hour from now, 7:30 p.m. Well, excuse me, not 6 hours from now. Not an hour from now. 6 hours from now. 1:30 right now, 7:30 tonight, as PW will play Ithaca at Alma College. That's the big game tonight. I will say, though, I mean, there's some pretty intriguing games tonight. None that really touch that one. But again, Gaylord at Sexton. For those who are trying to stay local, you got Waverly that will be taking on Lansing Catholic. Charlotte at Fowlerville. Coldwater at Hazlitt. So if you want to get out and about and don't feel like traveling to Alma College, there's still some great local action. But that one's going to be good. Ithaca PW. So much thanks to Jeremy Miller for joining me on the show to start. And now we transition to our second guest of the hour. And I tell you what, I did not know about this story until I was walking to my office. And right next to my office here at WKAR is our mailbox. And, you know, I go to my mailbox right after I get off the air here on Current Sports as I'm heading to my office. And I see a letter in there. And it is from a man by the name of Mitch Lutsky, who reached out to me. And, you know, he typed up a letter talking about his new book entitled The Page Fence Giants. And in doing some research and reading the letter from Mitch, this is one incredible story that I had no idea about. The Page Fence Giants was an all-star black baseball club sponsored by a woven wire fence company in Adrian, Michigan, graced the Diamonds all the way back in the 1890s. Formed through a partnership between black and white boosters, the team's respectable four-year run was an early integration success before integration was phased out decades ahead of Jackie Robinson's 1947 debut. And the growing Jim Crow sentiment blocked the Page Fence Giants' best talent from the major leagues. Mitch Lutsky tells the story of the Page Fence Giants, a history of black baseball's pioneering champions, and now joins us via phone. Mitch, welcome to Current Sports. How are you on this Friday afternoon?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on here. I was at my classroom at Williamson High School this morning, so I rushed home here to be in my man cave writing den for the phone call, so I'm pretty happy.
Awesome to have you, Mitch. And you know what? I want to start here, Mitch. How did you hear about this story? And what really inspired you to put together this remarkable piece of work?
Well, it was not because I was seeking to write a baseball book, and I basically stumbled upon it. And what happened was, in addition to being a high school teacher at Williamston, I coached a track team out here. I'm a volunteer at the Williamston Depot Museum. And so what happened was, several years ago, I decided to write a book about interesting stories about Williamston. And while doing that research, I discovered in 1895 that Williamston, and we don't quite know where, built a baseball facility with a wooden backstop and tried to make a kind of a town team. And they would play teams in Mason and Hazlitt and Fowlerville and Howell. Well, also in 1895, the Michigan State Minor League was resurrected. There had been a similar league in 1889. Mm-hmm. So in 1895, the Lansing Senators was a minor league team, as were the Adrian Demons. Well, the Williamston Baseball Association wanted to get teams to play in town to raise money and to make money. You could play the local people or put on exhibitions. They had mentioned the Page Fence Giants that I had never heard of, wrote on a sticky note, threw it in the folder, didn't really think much about it, wrote this book. And then about, a, I don't know, 6 or 7 months later, I was thinking, maybe I'll do another book. And I'm like, well, the Page Fence Giants, so I Googled it like everybody does, and Wikipedia comes up with like two paragraphs. I'm like, wait a minute, this is like an all-star baseball team. They were champions. And then Saul White, and I'm a member of SABR, the Society of American Baseball Researchers. Mm-hmm. So I was familiar with Saul White. Like, he played on this team. So I couldn't find anything. So I said, I'll call the museum in Adrian, Michigan, in Lenawee County. I bet they have, like, books and folders and files and clippings. So I called them a couple of years ago in the summer, and they said, we really don't have much, but you're free to come down and look at our file. So I went down there, and they basically had 3 or 4 photocopied articles and a couple of pictures. That was it. They said they get a lot of requests about this team, but they don't know much about it. So I then wrote to every African-American black baseball expert blindly. I didn't know any of them. Mm-hmm. And said, I think I'm going to do a book on the Page Fence Giants. Is this something that's interesting? Because I had done history. I'm a pretty big baseball fan, but I was not aware of this team either, Al. Mm-hmm. So the response was overwhelmingly, please do this book. This needs to be done. These are great players that nobody knows about. We'll support you. So they sent me an article or a photocopied paragraph, but there's never been a book. And I think there's been like a 5-page article on them 25 years ago in the Michigan Historical Chronicle. And that was basically it. So
wow.
That's what I did. And so thinking, of course, that it was just kind of the story had been lost because of the time, I went to the Sporting News Online, which I get because I'm in SABR, and I thought there'd be all these stories, Al, about the champion Page Fence Giants. There were like 2 articles. I read every Sporting News and Sporting Life from about the summer of 1894 to the spring of 1899, because the Page Fence Giants went from 1894 to 1898. Mm-hmm. And that took me 200 hours. Mm. And all I would have is a little sentence here or there. The team beat the Peoria Distillers 3-1, George Wilson 5 strikeouts. So then I went to the State of Michigan Library and went through microfilm, hours and hours, well over 200 hours, of Adrian, Daily Telegram, Evening Telegram papers, and their Weekly Times and Expositor. Then I drove down to the library in Adrian and did that again. And basically I pieced together sentence by sentence, because unlike, I'm sure you know, being in the media, the newspaper articles in the 1890s were not 12, 13, 15 paragraphs long.
Right.
They were only a few sentences. So I was basically would find out when the Adrian paper would say something about them in 1895 and then try to locate where they played in that town. So I would get on the Manistee Evening News or the Kalamazoo Gazette or the Detroit Free Press and then try to piece it out that way. But since they played in 12 states in the province of Canada, it was kind of hit or miss, but I managed to stitch together a story about baseball, but it's also about America. It's about people working together. It's about Jim Crow. It's about sociology. It's about basically a bunch of superstar guys who have been kind of cast aside because they were barnstormers and they were not in a formal Negro League, which did not begin until 1920. So that's a pretty lengthy answer, but I basically stumbled upon this working on a book to raise money for my Depot Museum in town, and then just fell into this, and now I'm like giving podcasts and talk shows. I spoke at the Tecumseh Library last night, and the Negro League Baseball Museum is trying to book me for later on this year in Kansas City, which would be like the ultimate honor on the planet.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing, yeah, Mitch. And you know what? You just got to describe, you know, how you were trying to get more information on the Paige Finch Giants, because there wasn't much out there. I mean, there's a sentence or two here, and you have to kind of piece through things. I mean, that to a degree had to be very frustrating, I'm sure. So how did you go about really finding sources who knew firsthand what this team was all about?
I have not found any letters, diaries. Obviously, the team disbanded in 1898 and formulated again in Chicago as the Columbia Giants. I basically went through newspaper articles. And back in the day, if people read old articles, so I had to read the paper, the personal section, because it'd be like, you know, the first sentence would be, Mrs. McGillicuddy's got nice roses, stop by the paper with them. The next sentence would say, Paige Finch Giants home this weekend, 3 games. You have to read all this stuff. The next column might say, Saul White is signed from the Fort Wayne team. So then I would go to the Fort Wayne newspapers and see why did Saul White leave and everything else. He left because the Fort Wayne team, which was an integrated team in the minors in 1895, collapsed financially. So I basically stitched together sentences and paragraphs through this four-year period. As I said, I stopped totaling my reading of online newspapers or microfilm when I got to 400 hours because it was getting ridiculous. I'm like, who's going to do this? But this is the first book on these guys, and they're just fascinating. They were so good, and they were similar to the Harlem Globetrotters, Al, in that there was an entertainment piece. But the entertainment piece was because of the tension in the audience, depending upon what community you were in, as to how comfortable you were having these superstar ball players coming in and whip the local guys. So at the beginning, they rode bicycles and kind of firemen's outfits, kind of like Pied Piper through town, and then you would say, oh, let's go watch these guys play ball. And then the Paige Fence Company would have fence agents. And this was a woven metal farm fencing. And then the agents would say, hey, do you like our ball club that we're sponsoring? Buy some of our fencing. And fencing was the number one employer. There were several factories in Adrian during this time. Mm-hmm. Well, if the game got out of control and you're beating the local guys 15 to nothing, well, maybe when you hit a home run, you cartwheeled around the base, or you broke into song, or you played shadow ball. Because at this time, the Klan was on its second kind of, it had been kind of crushed by U.S. Grant. But in the 1890s, with the advent of Plessy versus Ferguson, and I have this in my book, I explain this all.
Mm-hmm.
There was this color line being drawn, as you had mentioned. And so there were integrated teams until about 1897 and 1898. And then the color line that was essentially broken by, you know, Jackie Robinson playing in the majors in 1947. But they were integrated teams. They played the Cincinnati Reds. They played lots of minor league teams. They played in Lansing, the Lansing Senators. And this team, this is kind of getting ahead of myself a little bit, but the management team, which was Bud Fowler and Grant Home Run Johnson, two African-American gentlemen who played in Findlay, Ohio, with white owners of Len Hawk, a former mayor of Adrian, and the Taylor brothers, who were hardware store, sporting goods merchants, they got this Paige Fence Giants team with the fence company. But then Adrian wanted a Michigan State minor league team, which was called the White Team, except two of the Paige Fence Giants were removed, George Wilton and Vasco Graham, African-American pitcher and catchers, and they played the entire season for the Adrian Demons. And when the Demons had injured players, they grabbed black ball players off the Paige Fence Giants, signed them, and so Adrian had an integrated minor league team, which was very rare.
That's amazing.
At this time.
Wow.
Yeah, so I wrote this in my preface. It's, I'm kind of paraphrasing. I said, this is not a book only for baseball nerds and stat heads. This is a story about American history. So I go into sociological aspects. I don't get preachy or anything like that, but But it's just this fascinating time because all the kids think, well, there were no black people that played baseball until Jackie Robinson. Of course, some kids think Babe Ruth was African-American. It's always amazing to me. But,
well, are you serious? Some kids think Babe Ruth was a brother?
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I know it. So this is a fascinating story. And so people are just like they haven't heard of it. And so so they were entertainers for kind of self-defense. And then there was this magic train car that was very expensive that the Page Friends Company bought, and they had William Wendell Gaskin, who, by the way, was born and raised in Lansing, and he moved to Jackson and Adrian. He was the chef. And then a couple of other gentlemen, Albert Carter and Robert Henry, depending upon what year, were the porter barber. And this was a self-contained car, fancier than a Pullman car, with china and fine dishes and sleeping berths and really nice seats, because even though we were in the north and the Patriots Giants only played north of the Mason-Dixon line, from town to town you did not know the acceptance rate of the African Americans. So this car would be put behind a Lakeshore Michigan Southern train or the Wabash Central, pulled into a town, and then they'd figure out would a restaurant serve them. If yes, they would get off and go into town. If the hotel would put them up, then they would go to the hotel. If not, they could stay on the train car and eat and sleep there without any hitch. So this train car was valued at like $30,000, and it was state-of-the-art. But that was also a sign of, yeah, it looks like we're playing baseball, but there's this underlying current in some communities that this racial divide is okay on the ball field. We'll ignore it. But after that, it's going to be dealt with Jim Crow law. So, I mean, I was just fascinating on so many levels, Al.
Wow. Like you just said, Mitch, I mean, this isn't a book just about baseball. Again, this is about American history. And really, you get a look into the cultural and racial dynamic that was taking place during that time. This is just a fascinating story, Mitch. Final question before we start to pub the book and let folks know out there how they can get their hands on this, because I for sure want to dive into this book. It sounds absolutely amazing. But when it comes to integration success within the game of baseball, you know, you just mentioned Jackie Robinson and his 1947 debut and what that did for desegregating the game. Where do you think the Page Finch Giants fits in the history of trying to integrate the game?
That is a question that I've spoken with experts in black baseball, and it's really hard because there were only four or five teams at this time that the Cuban Giants, Cuban ex-Giants, Chicago Unions, a couple of teams in the South. But there's almost no statistical data. There are some final scores, which I have a lot in my book, and I have statistics in the back. I've kind of glommed together. Mm-hmm. And there's no video, obviously. There's only three or four pictures of this team in the four-year span existing. So the statistical saber number crunchers, they have a tendency, I have found, to dismiss them, because unless you tell me homers, batting average, you know, war or whatever, it's hard to wrap your hands around it. Because the teams, and also at this time, it's very difficult because you had mostly white umpires, and, you know, what was the ball and strike count? What were they really safe or out at first? How many strikes did you actually have to throw over the plate before you could strike out a white player? And so they had a bunch of wins, but it's very hard because, as I said, this is the first book in 120 years since the team started. So people, even baseball people that are like just into black baseball or Cuban baseball or women in the baseball, a lot of them have no idea about this team other than, oh, yeah, we know there were some traveling elite-level professional teams at this time. So I know the Negro League Baseball Museum sent me an email and said, this is an important story. It fills a gap. So to me, I guess it's a gap-filling book that we can kind of say, okay, where do they stand? But it's just like you unearth something that's been forgotten. And somebody said, well, how much is it worth? I don't know. Let's talk about it. So that's kind of how I've answered it. I don't know if that's clear enough, but
no,
that's the best I can do.
For sure. Mitch, unreal. This is such an amazing story. Again, Mitch Lutzky, he is the author of The Page Finch Giants, A History of black baseball's pioneering champions. Mitch, we got to have you back on to go more in depth on this, and I can't wait to tear through it and have you back on to really dive into some specifics. Mitch, for those listening out there, though, that want to get their hands on your book, how can they do so?
I know that Schuller's Books and Okemos has it. My publisher is McFarland Publishing Company out of North Carolina. You can buy it online there. I'll be speaking at the Williamson Depot Museum on Sunday, November 12th at 2 o'clock. I'll be doing a book signing and sale there. I also have an author website, www.mitchlutsky.com. They can access that. And I'm trying to set up some other things. I'm speaking at the Williamson Library in February. So I'm still kind of in the book came out in late April and early May, and I was still coaching track at the high school, so I didn't really get some stuff together. But
yeah,
McFarland or Schuller's Books, Amazon, obviously you can get it off Amazon and just order it as well there. And then they can buy their book if they want to come see me at a book talk. You know, I can sign it or whatever. But yeah, I'm really pumped about this. This book ended up being way more interesting, way better, and way longer than I thought it would be. So I'm excited, Al, that you think this is a cool topic, because that makes me excited as well.
Beyond cool, my man. And again, we'll have you back on, Mitch, because I want to read a little bit of it and then really kind of dive into some more specifics. It's a fascinating story. Mitch, thank you so much for your time. We'll be in touch, all right, my friend?
Okay, thanks, Al. I appreciate it.
All right, let's hit our final break. Wow, what a story, right? Let's hit our final break, and we come back. We'll invite to the show James Moore. We'll have the swap meet with James Moore that will take us on home and into the weekend here on this Fri-yay edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Wow, what an interview, right? My goodness. Mitch Lutsky, who is the author of The Page, Finch Giants, A History of Black Baseball's Pioneering Champions. What a story. What a story. And prior to Mitch coming on, of course, we welcome Jeremy Miller, head coach of the Pewaumee Westphalia football team, as PW gets ready to take on the Ithaca Yellow Jackets at Alma College, a 7:30 p.m. kickoff time. That should be a fun game. And to take us on home here on this Friday, it's the final guest of our triple header of guests. And he's a dear friend who joins us each and every Friday here on the show. His name is James Moore, here for yet another edition of the Swap Meet with James Moore. James joins us via phone this week. James, how you doing, my man? Oh, do we have James? Is James there, Jack? No? Okay, we'll keep working here and try to get James Moore on.
I'm here.
Oh, he's here. Okay, we got you now. Here. We had some technical difficulties behind the glass. We're good. James, what's up, brother?
Hey, what's going on, buddy? How are we doing today?
Always good talking with you. And I know you are a bit tired today, because I'm pretty sure you were up late last night partying like it was 1999 as the DeWitt Panthers got that game one win over Grand Rapids Christian last night. A 22-10 victory. You are an assistant coach for Rob Zimmerman's squad. They had to feel pretty good last night, right, James?
You know what? It felt really good. We had it was a good game. It was a first game, and you know, we could tell it was a first game. But one thing I have to say is our kids came out and played. Six minutes left in the game, it was a 5-point game. Okay,
right.
And, you know, it was they drove down and scored a field goal with like 6 minutes to go, and that made it a 10-15 game. And our kids, you know, hung in there. They hung in there. They put a drive together, and we went down and scored to finish off the game and won 22-10. But I've seen a lot from our kids yesterday, and it's kind of good that it happened the first game of the year. You know, you always want to win, but you want to go out and have a good showing. And our kids had their backs up against the wall, and they came out and played.
and pulled it out.
So I tell you what, that 22-10 final doesn't tell the whole story then, huh, James? It was much closer than that final score indicates, huh?
it totally does, yeah, because at halftime it was 15-7.
Wow.
Okay. It was 15-7. So we had, you know, we had some turnovers. They had some turnovers. Like I said, it's the first game, so we had to get our feet wet and, you know, get the boys out there. You know, first time they went against another opponent. And actually, Christian was a very, very good squad. Okay.
They are.
Very good squad.
They are solid.
Very good. And you know, like I said, my, our boys came out and played really, really well. The coaching staff, Coach Zim, you know, Coach Zim is always ready. And, you know, he had them ready, and, you know, like I said, we got a lot of room for growth, and that's what it's all about, especially after the first game.
Certainly, and I know you guys are going to go back to the drawing board and just get better as the season rolls along. DeWitt, one of the most consistent high school football programs here in mid-Michigan. And real briefly, James, as we have just 2 minutes left here, I just wanted you to kind of recap what happened last night. And also, I just want you to really briefly just kind of elaborate on the kind of night that DeWitt senior running back David Locher had. 190 yards, 2 touchdowns. The kid is real, isn't he?
Hey, that kid is one of the toughest, hard-nosed kids that I've ever coached. That kid is—he runs his tail off. Okay, mm-hmm. I would like to use another word, but I won't. Okay,
right?
You know, I try to keep it sensitive for you, man. I know you got, you know, I understand. You know,
I don't want the FCC calling me. I hear you, James.
I don't want them calling you neither. But that kid ran so freaking hard. And granted, this kid is just now coming back from a little hip clinic injury.
Right.
You know,
that's amazing.
So we had to take care of him the last couple of weeks to get that right, because hip pointer is like, almost like a growing injury. It's a nagging one.
Okay.
But man, he is phenomenal. He ran well. He's a good kid, works hard, and that's just the beginning. You're going to see a lot more from him this year.
And I tell you what, we'll see a lot more of you, my man. As we just have a minute left here, I wanted to kind of use this as a preview of next week's show on Friday, because not only do we hope to have you at 1 o'clock next week, James, but you will be a part of our tailgate special on Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. It's going to be fun stuff. We got some more great guests that will be joining James that hour as well, including Darian Harris, former MSU captain and linebacker great. So, James, thank you so much. Go ahead and get some rest. Just wanted to check in with you real briefly, and we will talk to you next week. All right, my friend?
Hey, I told you, I'm your co-host next week, baby.
You got it. I can't wait. I can't wait.
All right, brother. Hey, have a good weekend, and I'll catch up with you, all right?
The one, the only James Moore. All right, have a great weekend, folks, and be easy, people.